Well, I'm glad and excited to be back for the 311th installment of the show, and hopefully you are too. I'm glad you're here. We're going to have a fun show. I always have the goal of having a fun, maybe interesting, hopefully informative show. I know most of you, the vast majority, are return listeners, so you already know what to expect. If you are new, I hope you'll listen to the whole show. I do my best for the first part to get you interested. The second part is our Christian-specific segment. I hope you'll stay around for that. It won't probably, hopefully, won't be something you would expect. You might get something out of it, even if that isn't normally your cup of tea. Encourage you to stick around for it. So, like I say, that's roughly the halfway point of the show. I may get a little preachy early. I can't make any promises. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes because I appreciate it. It means a lot. If you want to do that, just look on our description here for this show on Radio Albion. I got snail mail. That's it. Don't be asking me about no Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever. I got snail mail. There are some crypto addresses on the Radio Albion website. Those were left from Sven. Had those up before he went away. So, I got snail mail. Address an envelope. Put something in there. That's it. That's it. It's the most simplest of matters. Let's hit that listener supporter mail bag. Good day, GPD. Say hello to Sven and stay healthy. That's from Triangle Whip. Appreciate it. I tell you, y'all going to have to bear with me. I'm just about over that. I'm pretty much over that flu that I had here a few weeks ago. But I've got this nagging cough that I can't quite shake. Shouldn't affect the show because I have this technical skill. I should, after 311 plus episodes, I should have a little bit of skill developed. But you might catch me kind of coughing and catching my throat because I'm at this point. You have had one of them coughs that you just can't get rid of it. Can't quite kick it. You can feel it. You're this close, but it just keeps coming back. Other than that, yes. I'm doing fine. I did hear from Sven again the other day. I'm glad you mentioned Sven. He's continuing to do okay. I'm looking forward to the end of this year when he's off of all his different conditions, parole and whatnot. But all in all, he's doing good. All things considered. Let's see here. GPD seems to be white folks thrive best during hard times. Our great grand folks. Had nothing compared to the life we live today, and they managed to have six or more children. I pray the U.S., under the con man Trump, will be stupid enough to start a war with Iran. I think Russia will step in and boom, the nukes will fall. We need a good cleansing fire. That's from Mr. T. Mr. T, having a rough day. I understand the feeling. We all have. We all have those days. I myself have at times said, you know, if I seen the nuclear flash go off, the last thing everybody going to hear before we all get taken out is a maniacal laughing at some of these. At least these other people are going too. Now, man, you know, it's just I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, you may see a war with Iran, but I don't think the nuclear thing is going to happen. I'm not trying to rain on your parade, Mr. T. I don't think you're going to get to see nukes. You might see Israeli nukes. I don't know. I don't. Let's see here. I'm going to come back to some of that because something I find interesting. We'll do our last one here because we can tie it in, I think, maybe. GPD, I started to go and then I had to catch myself because I started to cough and I got all tongue-tied. GPD, some shekels for the show. Actually, U.S. dollars in case someone thinks I'm sending demonic currency. No demonic currency, please. With Trump back in office, things appear to be moving in a positive direction. Do you think this represents a genuine turning point or is it just a temporary rebound? And the Western world will continue its slow decline. And that's from Peter. Thank you very much, Peter. And say, I put these two together because I think I can tie them in if I can get my thoughts all lined up. What we're seeing You know, because I mean, like Mr. T talking about the con man Trump, and then Peter talking about, you know, it looks like some things are turning around. I said back before the even election, I said, what we're seeing is Trump making a deal. What I'm just simply observing is what he got out of the deal. Now, it's obvious he promised basically greater Israel. The Palestinians are under the bus. He's basically promised Israel that they're going to get to expand, and he's going to rubber stamp that. That's an obvious, and that's not exactly a surprise. Lots of people, that's nothing new. A lot of people pointing that out. Obviously, he was allowed to be elected. We know the elections are rigged. He's allowed to be elected. And a big, huge part of that was expansion, you know, Greater Israel Project. This latest talk he was doing about, oh, we're going to own the Gaza Strip and all of the rest of it. So that's what he's offering to them. But then you have people that focus on that and they don't ask the question, what's he getting in return? You know, like it's a one-sided deal. And he's not making a one-sided deal. See, I look at these positive developments as Peter is pointing to. And I'm just interested to see what kind of deal he made. We know they're expanding Greater Israel. But what are we getting in exchange? Because you look at a lot of the stuff he's doing. Excuse me. And if this was in his first term, the media is whining now, but that's all they're doing is they're whining. In his first term, I mean, there would be like end of the world apocalyptic meltdowns over some of this stuff he's doing. And yet it's pretty muted. The responses are pretty muted. Again, there's some liberal media whining about it, but you notice that there's not the hysterical over the top reaction. Why is that? Because that's part of the deal. See, this is what he negotiated on his side. We're not going to know until we just kind of watch it play out. When I see these things come out, like some of this government corruption that they're turning up, or, you know, the fact that he's obviously planning to wind down the Ukraine stuff or whatever, these positive developments, this is stuff he negotiated in. He's giving away things over here. Now, there may be some other things he's given away. Those aren't going to be positive developments. Which what we're seeing is real, because we didn't get to go. We didn't get invited to the negotiations. Again, when you keep in the context that the elections are rigged, so he was allowed to win. Well, why? Because he agreed to certain conditions. He agreed to do certain things when he got into office. See, the first time, he didn't understand all that. And basically got steamrolled by the system. The second time, this time, because, you know, they just did a fraud for 2020, booted him out, and it didn't matter what he did, and then threatened him with a bunch of legal action, which has miraculously gone away. Now, this time it's all different, isn't it? Because now he understands it's a negotiation. All of the lead up to the election was negotiation. We can see some of the things he's given away, and we're seeing some of the things that he got in return. You see, I put these two listener letters because I think it highlights kind of different ends of the spectrum. No, I don't think the nukes are going to fall, but no, I don't think it's a quote-unquote turning point and things are going to get better. I think we'll see some improvements. But the American empire is doomed. I mean, this is just, these things are cyclical in their nature. And this is a crumbling and decaying empire. Now, what that's going to look like in the end, I have no idea. I'd be lying if I told you I did. And there's no point in trying to guess. But no, America becoming America from, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, no, there's no going back. It's just like you yourself, you have a lifespan. And you shouldn't, sadly, a lot of people do. You shouldn't be one of these people like you're 70 years old trying to act like you're a teenager talking about your girlfriend or whatever. Shouldn't be one of those people. You should accept the different stages of your life. It's the same thing for countries. You know, America is at the end stages of its life. It's not dead yet, but it's at the end stages of its life. That's a reality. It's not. I take positive stuff where I get it. You know, it doesn't have to be earth shattering. I think people get so negative sometimes that even when something decent, they see something decent happen, they just can't take it. Everything's got to be a loss. You'll see, you'll see a positive development. And it's like, no, that's part of the conspiracy. Just, hey, if you see something happen, you know, like the blatant fraud that is just the tip of the iceberg with the USAID thing, which we talked about last week. I mean, that's a good thing. You know, that's a good development. Do I think that means America's back? No, which I don't think would be a good thing. Anyway, I've been open. My long-term hope is to see secession. I think we would be better off breaking up into smaller independent nations than this monolithic thing. That's always what I said. But even if that does not happen, the trajectory is for America to eventually be reduced to being more or less like a regional, you know, a regional power. It'll be the power over on this side, but not the global super cop superpower thing. Those days are over. What you got is a bunch of people in denial of that. What I say is, look, take the positive. You know, good night. Take a win. You know, I mean, yeah, no, it doesn't mean, you know, an earth changing thing, but take a win when you see it. Something, you see something positive come around, take it. It's okay to understand also that that doesn't mean everything is fixed, but we'll take it when we get it. At the same time, yeah, no, I'm never going to be a part of this weird cult thing they've started to where like Trump is the Messiah or something. I'm never going to do that either. Just take the good, the bad. This thing is changing. And what it's going to look like when it's done, we don't know. It's going to get rough. Don't have to have nukes falling for things to get tough. Things are already getting tough. Things are probably going to get tougher. But we'll take the good and bear through the bad, and we'll see where we wind up. That's all we can do. We got to live our own life. We got to keep living our lives at the end of the day. Remember the things we can't. We can't affect. Well, that gets us through the listener support of Mailbag. Good stuff. I do have one more, by the way, and I'm saving it for the Christian specific segment. So we'll circle back. We'll circle back to the listener supporter mailbag here in a little bit. Well, we still got some time, and I thought we'd talk a little bit. I find it interesting when it comes to advice, taking advice. When should you ask for advice? When should you give advice? You see, as you can tell, I get tired of talking about things in the news. That's why I talk about these other things. This is my flagship show. This is the show. But it's because I get tired of talking about the news. There's other things I like to talk about. Other things that matter. Advice. I thought we'd talk about advice. When should you give it? When should you heed it? What are some guidelines? What kind of advice do I have about advice? I learned a long time ago. I instituted a policy for myself many years ago, and I try to stick with it. Sometimes I catch myself backsliding. And my policy, don't give your opinion unless somebody asks for it. How many times will people, like somebody's standing there telling somebody what's going on, and some guy has to start blurting out his opinion on it, and nobody asked for it? I came to the realization a long time ago, people don't care what you think. Now, y'all enjoy some of the things I think about. Y'all tune into this show. I don't get a big head over it. People don't care about what you think. And what I mean by that is, if somebody's telling you about something, they don't care what you think about it. I made it a policy some time ago, don't give my opinion unless it's asked for. And it's funny because people hint You know, they'll start telling you about what they got going on. And they're looking at you like they're waiting for you to chime in. And you're just sitting there going, just nodding, just listening. And then when people do finally say, what do you think? I have been known to follow up and say, are you sure you? Because if you ask me what I think, I'm going to do my best to give you the truth. Yeah, I could be wrong. I'm just a man like all the rest of you. But I've been known to look at somebody and say, are you sure you want my opinion? Because if you don't, because here's the thing, most people don't want your opinion. Even if they tell you, yeah, I want your opinion. No, they don't. You're going to get confused because you're going to give your opinion. They're going to be mad at you. You're going to be like, well, you wanted my opinion. They never wanted your opinion. They wanted to hear you reinforce what they've already decided. They've already made up their mind. Somebody's at your work or a family member, whatever, and you working with somebody, whatever, and he's telling you about his problems. And then he says, well, what do you think? Odds are he's already made up his mind. He just wants you to reinforce. People are always looking for that reinforcement. It's a way of relieving themselves of responsibility for their own decisions. We're going to get to that important point here in a minute. They want to hear their opinions. Doing podcasts, I learned a long time ago that people don't want to hear your opinion. I mean, I appreciate all of you listening. But people in general that don't want to hear your opinion, they want to hear their opinions coming out of your mouth because it reinforces what they already believe. You know, you have people listen, and then you say something they don't want to hear, and then they all mad. That's just the way it is. So when somebody will say, what do you think? No, really, I do. I want to know what you think. Be prepared for them to be offended, but give them a truthful answer. It can be tempting to sugarcoat things, to be diplomatic, to be polite. I can remember a few times when I would come back and say, are you sure? Because I'm fixing to lay something on because they just spent 10 minutes laying out their story of dumbassery. And I'm fixing to give them some truth. And they're not going to hear it. They're not going to like it. So I have been known to say, are you sure you want my opinion? And you don't just want to hear something, some nice words. Oh, yeah. Tell me. Here it comes. Good and hard. They don't want to hear it. Don't want to hear it. They really just wanted to be. They just wanted to hear what they've already decided. That wears me out. Don't give your opinion. Don't give people advice unless they specifically ask for it. And if you know they're not going to like it, make sure they really want it. You know, that second time you say, are you really sure? And they're like looking at you and then it clicks that he's fixing to tell me something I don't want to hear. You know what? Yeah, nah, never mind, man. I don't care what you think. It's going to probably be less trouble for you. When should you ask for advice? You know, when should you ask for, you know, there's a wise man seeks counsel of others. In the Bible in the Old Testament, there was a young king and, you know, there was a group, you know, he inherited the throne from his father. I'm not getting preachy early. I'm just using this as a demonstration because it's very interesting to me and very fitting. So this young man ascends to the throne. There's a group of people in the kingdom that his father oppressed. I mean, they had a fallen out, whatever. And after he ascends the throne, this group of people sends messengers to him, say, hey, if you'll let up on us a little bit, you know, we'll be loyal subjects. We'll do what, you know, we'll be your go-to guys. Well, the young king says, okay, let me seek counsel. Well, first he brings in his daddy's advisors. In other words, his elders. And these guys come in and they tell him, yeah, you know, look, if you let up on these guys and let them come in, retake their land or whatever, these guys will be loyal subjects to you. And from here on, and this will fortify you over here. This will make you stronger. This will make the kingdom stronger. All right. What do these old guys know? Even though his daddy trusted them, what do these guys know? So then he calls in his friends to get their opinion. The young king calls his friends in. His friends says, man, they're just trying you, man. They're just trying. This is what you need. They're trying to see if you're soft. This is what you need to do. You need to tell them, you know what? My daddy was too easy on you. I'm going to be 10 times harder on you. And then they'll know you're hard, man. You're hard. They'll know to respect you then. And what does the young king do? Whose advice does the young king take? Of course, he goes with the advice of his friends, because what do those old guys know, right? And this is where he does that very thing, calls the messengers in and tells them this. And they go back and wind up bringing out an army, making war, and they're a thorn in his side from there on. This is the abbreviated version. Don't press me on details, but you get the gist of it. If you go to seek advice and counsel, understand, the younger you are, the less your friends know. They don't know any more than you do. Whatever age group you are in, you know, I'm in my late 50s. If I take counsel with somebody else in their late 50s, they're going to probably have about the same amount of knowledge on the topic that I do. If you're 18, your fellow 18-year-olds, they don't know shit either because they're only 18. You're better off finding an old guy who maybe knows because he's been through it and done it. He got experience. He's built up his XP level. Now, you always have to be cautious because there are plenty of old fools out there. You know, take heed. Look at who you're asking for. Ain't no one going to go ask for financial advice from the homeless. Maybe that homeless guy is actually a really nice guy, but you still ain't going to ask him for financial advice, are you? If you're going to, you know, if you're having trouble with your wife, you know, don't go to your elder who's on his seventh marriage or has been through six marriages and now he's going to tell you all about his girlfriend even though he's in his 70s. That ain't the person to listen to. That's an old fool. That ain't the person to listen to. About marriage advice, that guy's been married six times. He ain't got it figured out yet. That's not the one to listen to. Look at their track record, is what I'm saying. Don't ask for financial advice from the homeless. Because that guy living in a cardboard box. If he was making good decisions, he wouldn't be living in a cardboard box, maybe. And always understand, people, like I said earlier, people look for, when somebody asks you for advice, they're looking for confirmation a lot of the most times of what they've already decided. And the flip side works as well. When you ask somebody, hey, what do you think? I got this going on. What do you think I should do? That person, if they've been through something similar, regardless, even if they had the shittiest outcome from it, they're going to recommend what they did. I know it doesn't make any sense, but I can virtually guarantee you, not every single time, there'll be a few people be like, well, don't do what I did. But most of the time, what they're going to recommend to you is what they themselves did, regardless of how well that came out for them. You know why? Because they don't give a shit about your outcome. They want to affirm to themselves that it's not their fault. They got a shitty outcome because of the decisions they made. But if you make the same decisions and you also get a shitty outcome, well, then they're not the dumb one because you did it too. Snicker all you want. People will do that. People take a lot of comfort in I'm not the only one. They do. That's how the road to hell is paved and wide. All these people blowing down. I'm not getting preachy early, but I'm just telling you, the road to hell is wide and easy. And there's a lot of people on it, and they're all looking at each other going, it's got to be all right. All these other people are going the same way I am. Telling you, man. People want others to do the same things they do because it makes them feel like they're smarter. You know, if everybody else is doing the same thing, I got to be on to something. And this brings us to the final thing. I talked about the young king in the Bible. You are the king. This is the most important part on this whole subject. You are the king of your life. And what I mean by that is, if we look at our story of the young king in the Bible, you know, and his friends giving him that really shitty advice, when it didn't turn out, is it his friends' fault? If he went around his friends up, hey, y'all told me to do this and it didn't work out good. And they're going to be like, hey, we just told you what we thought, man. You're the king. It was your decision. See what I'm saying? It's, you're the king of your life. It's fine. Seek counsel. Listen to other people's opinions. There's nothing wrong with that. You should get some different perspectives. At the end of the day, you own the decision. If you ignore someone's counsel or if you heed someone's counsel, regardless, you own the decision. If you screw it up, own it. Make your decision and stick with it. It isn't anybody, nobody else is responsible. You can take their counsel, you can ask them, but at the end of the day, you're the king. You're the king in your life. You're the king. You're the king in your life. The king in your life. And when you make the decision to do something, live with it. It's don't blame anybody else. You own it. Look, most of the time, the reason we struggle with decisions is because we want everything to be easy. That's human nature. We do. We want everything to be easy. When you struggle with a decision, the struggle is because we want to figure out what we should do that's going to have a 100% good outcome. Well, guess what? If that option existed, you wouldn't even be thinking about it. You would just go that way, right? The reason we struggle with decisions is because everything's a trade-off. Usually you're going to have something like choice A will have these good outcomes, but is going to have these negative outcomes. I don't like that. Now, choice B will negate those secondary negative outcomes, but then the first thing isn't going to happen. You see what I'm saying? In other words, we struggle with decisions to where no matter what we decide, there's going to be some aspects of it that suck. There's going to be some aspects of it that we don't like, that are negative. And we're trying to figure out a way to not have any of that. And sometimes there just isn't a way. You have to pick what you can live with and just understand that there's going to be some negative outcomes from it. You're not going to get everything you want. It's just not how life works. There's going to be some negative aspects and you're going to have to decide what you can live with. And, you know, if you can work those things through in your mind and understand those things so that you're prepared for them, then you're best off, you know. But at some point in time, what I want to say, take the counsel you need, you know, try to work through it. But look, at some point you got to drop the hammer and make a decision. You know, make a decision and then just keep moving forward. Once you've made it, just rock on. And I tell you another spoiler alert. The way you handle them after the fact is important. And what I mean by that is you're going to screw things up. You are. I promise you, you're going to screw things up. And you got to look back and say, okay, when you have a decision and maybe you didn't make the optimal one, look back and say, okay, well, why did I decide that? And more than likely, what you're going to find is you didn't have all the information. Things you thought were going to fall into place did not fall into place. Now, if there are things you can look back on, because it's important to look back and learn, as they say, learn from your mistakes. But how do you do that? Well, you look back realistically. Don't look back and now that you have hindsight and things you didn't know then, you know now. And you're like, man, I was really a dumbass. I screwed that up so bad. No, you didn't. You just didn't know. You can't see the future. You got to look back and say, okay, why did I decide to do that? Well, this is the information I had. I weighed all of these facts and I went with this. Turns out I didn't have all the information. There's nothing you can do about that. You made the best decision you could with the information you had. That's it. If there's something you can learn, you know, like, well, I thought this, but I was incorrect. If there's something you can learn, learn it and then let it go. This is important because there's nothing righteous. Too many people think repenting means beating yourself up for mistakes. That's not repentance. Sitting around beating yourself up, running yourself down in your mind, in your narrative, in your mind, that isn't repentance. It's not godly. I really am going to have to put some effort not to start preaching early here. That's not godly. You can't love your neighbor. You can't love anybody else if you don't love yourself. If you fall into a pattern of self-loathing, and I could get on a whole nother topic, I don't have time for that today. If you get into a spiral of self-loathing, you can't love anybody else, and it's going to lead to bad, dark places. We don't have time to get into that. My point here is, look, if there's something you could look back on and learn from it, fine. But if you made a bad decision just simply because there were things going on you had no way of knowing about, just let it go. Even if you did drop the ball somewhere and you should have known better, but you went against your better judgment, look back and say, yeah, I should have known better. Next time, I will know better. And then move on. Because you're not going to get it back. You're not going to get a second shot at it. You just, just move on. It's done. Things in the past don't exist. Other people can bring them up. I'm getting off on all sorts of things. I better rein myself in here. Look, people can bring it up, but they don't exist. You can't put it in your hand. You can't do it over. They don't exist. Let it go and keep moving. If there's information you can take in to do better next time, great. If there's not, then just let it go and keep on. Get on to the next decision. And the reason I say that is what happens if you get into this pattern of constant critique, you know, tearing yourself down, what that will do is it will paralyze you from making future decisions. You just get convinced that no matter what I decide, I'm going to screw this up. Look, no, that's not. It's not. See, it will paralyze you and you'll become unable to make a decision. Or you'll become over-reliant and you'll start wanting other people to make the decision for you, like you're offloading responsibility onto them because you're just convinced that you'll screw it up. You can't do that. Own it. Move on. If you do the wrong one, go back and look at it and say, okay, what did I learn from this? And then let it go and move on to the next thing. I guarantee everybody else is screwing up too. We are not going to screw up. We are going to get into the Christian specific segment. That's right. We can keep this train rolling. We got the locomotive wound up. We're shoveling the coal out of the coal car. We're doing old school here. We're going to keep the train rolling. You know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. And we're going to go ahead and jump right back into the listener supporter mailbag. Here we go. Hi, Dan. I'd like to hear your thoughts about keeping the Sabbath. Most people I know, including fellow believers, go about their business no matter what day it is. I had a job that required me to work every other weekend. I did not like it, but I had other days off so that I did not work 7 days in a row. It's tough wanting to do what is right, but being trapped in Babylon. And that's from Tony, and amen. It is tough in more ways than one. So, keeping the Sabbath. I mean, quick reference in Romans chapter 14, I'll just do verse 5. Paul writes, "One man esteemeth one day above another, another esteemeth every day alike. Let every man be fully persuaded in his mind." Actually, I'm going to go on partially through verse 6. "He that regardeth the day regardeth it unto the Lord, and he that regardeth not the day to the Lord, he doth not regard it." Now, before we get off into really pondering this, I find it interesting. The reason I read this is because I find it interesting that you can go all the way back to the beginning, all the way back here, the book of Romans, and Paul writes this because people were having these same questions. As believers, I think we too often forget. We're not coming up with new questions other people have had. Our own Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, if you're a regular listener to his Orthodox Nationalist show, he'll often do these shows on people you've never heard of, you know, some saint from you know, I don't know, the 1200s or 1300s or something. And but one of the things that I find interesting about some of those is when he gets into the material of what that person, you'll have some guy that lived in the 1400s, some monk in a monastery, and he spent his entire life pondering a question. And the question is what I'll find interesting, because it's questions that we all have. And this guy had the same question way back there. Here we read that Paul in the book of Romans, other people, he put this here because other believers at that time were struggling and trying to figure out these same questions. Jesus Christ said, God made Sabbath for the man, not man for the Sabbath. So people were struggling with these same things. And I think we get too personalized with these things in the sense that we tend to think, wow, this is new. This is something unique. I'm the first one. I'm the first one to struggle through it. And we're not. Believers have had these questions and these things they've struggled with. So, you know, as Jesus pointed out, God made the Sabbath for man. So what does that mean? Well, remember, they didn't live in the society we live in today. They didn't, you know, most people weren't out working regular jobs. Most people were on some level of self-employed, usually with, you know, animal husbandry or some sort of farming. When you're self-employed, it's up to you when you're going to work, when you're not. Now, there were people that worked for wages, but they were like day workers. You know, if you think of the meme of, you know, all the Mexicans out in front of Home Depot, you know, and people go by and say, hey, I need five guys for my crew today, and they jump in the truck. That's how, you know, wage paid people basically were then. There was an area in town they would hang out in. And like, if you needed somebody to work in your vineyard, you would go out there and say, hey, I need five guys from my vineyard, hop in the truck. Or in this case, it would be hop on the wagon or walk with me back to where we're going to work. And the third category of people were actual servants or actual slaves. Now, God mandating the Sabbath day meant that you had to give those guys days off. You know, you got a servant that's, you know, you got a slave. They got to do what you tell them to. But see, it comes from above you. You're required to give them that time off. And the idea of the time off is everybody stopped because they were deemed holy days. Everybody has to stop and think about the Lord. You know, it's a holy day. Why am I off today? Why am I not working today? A guy, if you own 1,000 head of sheep and, you know, you're doing the bare minimum getting ready for the holy day so that, you know, they're taken care of throughout the day. And you're thinking, you know, I really, when this holy day is over, I got to get out there and get shearing. I got to get out here. They didn't drench sheep back then. But if you were doing sheep now, you got to drench them. You got to shear them. You got all this stuff to do with sheep. And yet you're having to stop everything. If you had your way, you'd be out there working, right? So you're thinking, why am I having to do this? Well, I'm having to do it because God ordains it. And this makes you think, stop. Stop being distracted by the day-to-day worldly things going on and think about the Lord. Now, as I say time and time again, one of the things I love about the Bible, especially when you really get into New and Old Testament, excuse me, is how it all ties together. I'm going to tie this in, is written, even in the Old Testament is written that God doesn't desire the sacrifices of bulls and oxen. He doesn't desire. He desires people's sacrifice of righteousness, of truth. See, we're tying this in here. It's not about a day off. As Tony writes here, even believers, they go about their business no matter what day it is. And we're going to get to the gist of the matter here, I think. What does God want? What does God want from us? What does he want? You know, we should set our heart. Going back to what we read just now in the book of Romans with what Paul writes, you know, one man regardeth one day over another. One man regards one day as more important over another. Another day, another man regards each day as the same. Now, as Tony writes, a lot of people going about their day regardless. What does that mean? Well, it means they're not giving any thought to the Lord. That's what's implied here. And we know what he's talking about. if you're going about your day and you never think about the Lord, if you have one day a week and you go to church and for 1 hour you think about the Lord while you're sitting there listening to a sermon, or if you live each day and at least take some time out every day to stop, block out the things of this world, all these things you got going on, bills to pay, problems you got, and whatever, block those things out and set your heart upon God, get recentered, remember what's important every day. What do you think God desires out of that? You know, that's why I say you can tie this back into, he doesn't desire the sacrifice of bull and oxen and whatnot. He's looking for where your heart is. If you're just going about your day and all you think about is worldly things and the concerns of this world, and you're burning that time and not using it as God intended, that is a problem. I believe, I'm fully convinced that as believers, we should have some time each day, if possible, each day to shut everything down and set our hearts on the Lord. I know sometimes that's not possible, guys. I get it. I live in the real world too. But that should be our goal. So when we have that opportunity, we do so. This is what God desires. In other words, if you go all the way back to the dictates of the Sabbath days to what we're talking about now, it's the same thing. God is desiring for you to stop the worldly stuff for a minute and recenter your heart on Him. It doesn't matter what day it is. And this is what I believe. It doesn't matter. What matters is what God is trying to get you to do. If you look at His intention by creating the Sabbath days, then you're saying, well, He's trying to get you to stop being focused on the concerns of the world. Look, He knows. He knows you got bills to pay. He knows you got to go to work. He knows you got, you know, trouble at home, trouble at your job, whatever you got going on. He understands. He just desires you to remember that this is all temporary. Stop, shut it down, push everything out for a minute, and get refocused on the Lord. And when you're done doing that, and you're done praying and reading your Bible, whatever you're doing as you focus on the Lord, when you're done with that, then get back into dealing with your worldly issues. This is what He desires. This is why He originally created the Sabbath day. What are we doing? Are we just going about our days and we don't ever think about God? Then we're truly in violation of the Sabbath day because we're in violation of God's intention. Do you hear me? It doesn't matter what day it is. God would prefer that you do it every day. If you can't do it every day, then find a day. If this week it's Tuesday, then do it on Tuesday. That's your holy day. You know, spend an hour or so, whatever, seeking Him, reading your Bible, in prayer, shutting out, not thinking about all the BS around you. Shut it down and think about the Lord. Maybe next week it's going to be on Friday. So be it. Maybe the following week you'll have 2 days that you'll be able to do that. If possible to do it every day, that would be the thing. And here we get to the essence of what Paul wrote. To some men, every day is the same. He doesn't mean spend every day going around, bumbling around, thinking about worldly things and not God. He's saying when he says another man, every day is the same, he means for the other man, every day he sets his heart on the Lord. Remember, this is about believers. It isn't about the worldly. When Paul said every day is the same, he meant for some men, every day is a Sabbath day. Not every day is, oh, I'm going to go like everybody else in the world and wander around. When he says for some men, every day is the same, means for some men, every day is a Sabbath day. Every day they're thinking about God. Every day they're setting their hearts on the Lord. Every day they're striving to understand Him and grow spiritually. For other people, it's just a day here and there because that's all they can manage. And that, again, I get the real world. You know, I'm not condemning you, somebody. I'm not saying you're not fulfilling your duty as a believer. If you only have one day a week that you can set that time aside, do you hear me? It doesn't matter what day it is. Look at God's intention of what He created. It's for you to stop in the confusion of the world because we can't escape it. We're all in this world. We all got the same struggles. We all got problems. We all got things we're trying to figure out. We got drama, whatever you got going on. You got to find the time. And this too is an act of faith because it takes effort. I get so tired of the MCC message of, oh, well, you know, the faith is something you're just supposed to, you know, you just, it just comes easy. Nothing's required of you. I know I beat this drum probably to the point that people get tired of hearing of it. Your faith is what you do. This is confirmed throughout the Bible, Old and New Testament. Your faith is what you do, what actions you take. And when you go through the effort to set, yeah, you've got other things you could be doing in that hour, whatever you set aside for the Lord. Yeah, you got other things to do. And what are you going to do? You're going to sacrifice that to God. You're making a sacrifice. You're saying, and by sacrifice, I mean, you're saying, no, I am going to make the effort to set this time aside and try to understand him, to get recentered and remember why I'm even in this world in the first place, to understand, to grow, to gain knowledge of him. It's all good stuff. Good stuff. Set your heart on the Lord. If you've only got one day a week that you're going to be able to set that time aside, set the time aside. You know, if you could do it every day, that's every day. That's even better. Look at the intention. Again, thank you again, Tony, for the question. Gives us something to discuss. We got time. We're gonna keep moving on to other topics. Let's look real quick in the second epistle of John. I think we'll do verses. We'll start at verse 6 and just see how far I want to go. And John writes here, and this is love, that we walk after his commandments. I like this. This is powerful. Again, MCC loves to talk about love, and they never give a definition for it, do they? See, same questions. Nothing new under the sun. Again, and this is love, that we walk after his commandments. This is his commandment, that as ye have heard from the beginning, ye should walk in it. In other words, you do it. You don't just talk about it. You don't just sit around and you do it. It's how you actually live. You walk in his commandments. You're walking. It means you're doing it. It doesn't mean you're literally walking somewhere, going from here to there. He's saying you literally make effort. You do it. This is love. You love. You do what he says. You follow his commandments. Jesus said the same thing. We'll continue. For many deceivers are entered into the world who confess not that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh. This is a deceiver and an antichrist. Look to yourselves that we lose not those things which we have wrought, but that we receive a full reward. Now, what I had jotted down here as an idea, and this has been several days ago, and I don't remember all of what I had in mind. That's the way it is. I seek the Lord through the week, and then I have a thought, and it's like, this is something we're sharing, and I jot it down. But I just jot a line or two, and half the time I can't read my own handwriting. And then we come back to it. But the idea I had here is the notion, the truth should not be hidden, nor does it need to be embellished. The truth stands on its own. The truth is, you don't need to embellish it. You don't need to dress it up. And obviously, you shouldn't hide it. As written here in 2 John, you have these deceivers that have come along, and they're trying to hide the truth. They don't acknowledge Jesus Christ, who is what? The way, the truth, and the life. You see, they're trying to obscure it. They try to hide it. And then you have these other people, they got to dress it up. You know, they've got to embellish the truth. They got add a little pizzazz to it. Look, the truth stands on its own. I was thinking about a way to illustrate this. You know, Jesus used parables, and all through the Bible they use illustrations and demonstrations. To make a point. Now, as you know, one of my big gripes with the MCC is they've dumbed down the faith to the point, as long as you say some verses, then you're automatically, you know, rubber stamped to go in the kingdom of God, regardless of what you actually do. Although we're instructed that we're saved, what, by faith. And we already know our faith is our actions. If we're actually walking in faith, we're going to put some effort into it. See, this is a case of embellishing / obscuring parts of the truth. They dumb it down. They dumb it down to this simplistic thing. And you think about the father. I mean, Jesus used the parable of the owner of the vineyard coming back and seeing what his servants are up to and not finding most of them doing what they're supposed to do. And I was thinking about the disservice that the MCC does without explaining this out to people. You know, what's required? What does this mean to walk in faith in Jesus Christ? And what that's going to look like to the Lord upon his return. An illustration. And this is maybe good, maybe not. I always have a rural mindset when I think of these things. Say there's a landowner and he's going to go away for a couple of weeks or whatever. And he's got his lead man, you know, the foreman of his ranch or whatever. And he tells him, he says, look, go find me some hands to get out here and build this fence while I'm gone. You know, and go get some guys hired. Look, you know, and say this guy is wealthy. I'm just for illustration's sake. And he says, look, it's hard to find people. Go into town and tell them, if you'll come build this fence, when I get back, I'll give you a new pickup. That's pretty good pay. I'd jump all over that. But anyway, so he goes away. Now, his hired man goes into town and he starts telling people, hey, if you'll come out here to the place, because he gets worried. He starts thinking about it. He says, people ain't going to want to build no damn fence. And the master is going to be mad if he comes back and there's no one there. You know, if he comes back and there's no one there, he's going to blame me. So I got to get these guys out here. You see, they lose vision. He loses vision of what the master wants. He don't care if somebody comes out to the place or not. He wants his fence built. He don't care if one guy does it. He don't care if 100 guys does it. He just wants the fence built. The hired man he loses focus. He starts thinking. He starts getting distracted on what the actual goal here is. So what does he do? He goes into town and starts rounding the fellas up and says, hey, if you'll come out to the place, when the ranch owner gets back, he's going to give all of you a new pickup. He's like, Oprah, you get a car. And so he brings some of these. Some people don't come. Because some people hear this and they like, I smell a scam. You know, if it like the saying goes, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. See, some people ain't going to come because they're going to say, wait a minute. You tell me I just got to go show up, hang out at the ranch. And when he gets back, then give me a new pickup for being there. Nah, man, that's a scam. There ain't no way he's going to give me a pickup for doing nothing. And he's right. He's a scammer because he's leaving the truth out. He's omitting the truth because he thinks he's just got to get people to show up. So some people don't show up because they say that's a scam. Ain't no way he's going to give me a new pickup for just showing up, hanging out at the ranch for a week. But alas, some people come out. Sound pretty good. They come out and they're hanging out. Now, the rancher, the landowner comes back, and there's all these people lounging around. Ain't no fence been built. What's he going to say? He going to call his foreman, and he's going to say, what are you doing? Well, you said to bring all these guys out here, and no, I told you I wanted the fence built. Yeah, I told you to go get some guys to build the fence, not to come hang out, not to come lounge around. Why are these people lounging around? You got people walking up going, hey, where's my new pickup at? I thought maybe you used in town picking it out. What are you talking about? You ain't built no fence. You brought a bunch of lazy, worthless people out here. And worse, some of the people that he brought out would have been perfectly fine building the fence. In fact, maybe a few of them were looking around going up for him and be like, hey, are we supposed to be doing something? Because, I mean, I see some rolls of wire over here. I see a stack of posts. Now the foreman, he's committed to his easy message. No, man, just chill out and relax. You have some people there that would have been perfectly fine with building the fence, but nobody told them. The foreman fell down on the job. He got so convinced, and this is what I'm getting to. He got so convinced that nobody would actually want to build the fence that he worked his whole method around the idea that nobody wants to build the fence. And so he lost complete sight of what the landowner, what the rancher wanted, and turned it into his own mind into, well, he just wants some people out here. If I got some people out here to show, he'll know I did something. I got these guys out here. And then maybe he can be the one to break the news to them. They're supposed to be building the fence. No, the fence needed to be built before he got back. That was the whole point. He didn't mind giving them the new pickup. He got lots of money. He just wanted his fence built. Instead, he comes back. No fence is built. He's got a combination of people lazing around doing nothing, just looking for something free, something for nothing. And then some people who would have built the damn fence, but for some reason nobody told them they were supposed to build the fence. As a result, nothing got done. This is so much of the MCC in a nutshell, isn't it? We got to get these people in here. We just got to get them in here. And if we tell them that something's going to be required, there's going to be some effort on their part. You see, they're like the ranch foreman. Who convinced himself that nobody wants to build a fence, which probably says more about the foreman than the other people, doesn't it? See, he didn't want to build a fence either. Because he didn't want to build a fence. He's like, nobody else is going to want to build a fence. I don't want to build no damn fence. When in reality, he should have told everybody this is what's required. And when they got out there, even if it's two guys, you know what, not sitting up at the house drinking sweet tea, that means the ranch foreman should be down there with them. You know, I'm going to be down here getting sweaty with the rest of y'all. Let's get digging. Let's get stretching wire. Let's get this done. We got to get this done before the master gets back, before the landowner gets back. I know this is tough, guys. Remember, you're getting a new pickup out of this. Come on, man, let's get her done. It'll be worth it. You'll be glad. You'll be running air conditioner in your new Chevrolet or whatever. Whatever. See, it says something about the foreman, doesn't it? He didn't want to build no fence either. You see this? They don't want to tell people something's required because they're convinced they're not going to want to do any of that. So then they turn it into this mission. Well, how many people can I get? How many people can I get in the doors? Regardless of what they're doing, you just come, just show up. You'll be good to go. You see, they don't want to put in any effort, so they're convinced that nobody else will. That's why they dumb down the message to nothing's required of you. Repeat these verses after me. Voila, there's your ticket punched to the kingdom of God. Because they themselves don't want to put any effort in. We just talked earlier in the show about Sabbath days. What does God want? He wants you to walk in faith in Jesus Christ. That's how you're saved. What does it mean to walk in faith? Make the effort. Put something in. You know, like the old saying, you get out of it what you put into it. Put something into it. Make an effort. Make a demonstration of your faith. You see, so many of these people don't want to put the effort, so they convince themselves, like in my analogy here, they're like the ranch foreman. He doesn't want to build a fence. He convinces himself no one else wants to, but some people would. That's all God cares about. He don't care. The ranch owner wouldn't care if he got back and there were three guys is all that showed up and they're out there sweating their ass off building a fence. He's not going to be mad. I mean, yeah, the fence isn't built, isn't finished, but he's going to say, man, these guys are working hard. You guys are at least putting in the effort. He might be like, I wish the fence was done, but that's okay. You know, we got guys out here, including the ranch foreman. He out there with them. They're all the boys out there working. That'll work. We'll make it work. You know, it's not done yet. We'll get there. The ranch foreman didn't want to build the fence. He's convinced nobody else. And like I say, so many of these people, they're convinced nobody else wants to put any effort in for the Lord. So if they so they tell them no effort's required because they themselves don't want to put any effort in. It's a job. It's a job where you don't got to get your hands dirty. It's a job where people slap you on the back and you got some position or something. They convinced they themselves don't want to put any effort in. You see what I'm saying? This tells you about some of these people. They don't want to put any effort in, so they're convinced nobody else will. So I just got to get a lot of people in the door. God doesn't care about that. Again, all throughout the Bible, Old Testament, all the way through Jesus' ministry, all the way through the end of the New Testament, it's about getting a group in and then they start culling and you wind up with a remnant. It always comes out to a remnant. Yeah, you're not going to get, and you might get, go back to our analogy, if the ranch foreman had done what he's supposed to, he might have had 20 people that said, heck yeah, new pick, if he had been honest and said, hey, you got to come build a fence. He might have had 20 people. Yeah, I'll build a fence for a new pickup. And they go out there. But see, it's hot. And then they start putting the effort in. They have to start digging and stretching wire and setting posts and setting corner posts and gates. And they're stretching wire. And on day two, instead of 20 people out there, now you got 10. On day five, you're down to 3 dudes. That's how the Bible works. Yeah, you're going to have to, you tell them the good news. You got 20 show up. That's how Jesus' ministry worked. He'd show up in a town. He'd start doing miracles and telling people things they ain't never heard. And they're like, yeah. And they'd start telling people things they didn't want to hear. And then pretty soon, there's like no crowd. Like everybody left. And he's down to his 12 dudes. It's always about that. It's a whole pattern of the Bible. There's these patterns in the Bible that God shows us. Where you got to read the whole thing and start understanding the patterns. It's always about a remnant. That is always the pattern. Yes, 20 people may show up to build the fence, and when you're done, you got 3 guys. That's okay. That's all God cares about is the 3 guys that are going to show up. Because they're the ones willing to do it. They're the ones that are proving themselves. They're the ones investing their sweat and their time. And that they deserve a new pickup. They deserve a new pickup. They're putting the work in. He didn't care there's only 3. He didn't care. He wasn't about a number of 20. Is the 3 that he was looking for all along. Anyway. Maybe not the best illustration. But I think it proves the point. Hope you got something out of it. That's always my goal here. Hope you got something out of the whole show, but especially the Christian specific segment. We'll go ahead and wrap up with that. I appreciate you stopping by. I do. I appreciate you coming by every week. And as always, I hope I'll see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.